Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Wild Card Wednesday, which means get in your wild card requests. Any artist, any song, anything for our bumps later on. Wild Card Wednesday will commence. Get your texts in at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about life skills that everyone should know. And we're going to find out if everybody here on the overnight crew knows how to do these skills. I think there are 54 of them. We're going to find out how well we would survive knowing these life skills that we should have, and we want to hear from you guys as well. But right now, I want to welcome to the show one of my favorite guests. Herb Weisbaum is an Emmy Award-winning reporter, and he covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can read all of his stories, and you can subscribe to his newsletter at consumerman.com. Follow him on Facebook at Consumer Man and Twitter at The Consumer Man. He joins us once a month to talk about consumer issues and stories and the latest and to help us out. And he's a good friend of the show, and we welcome Herb Weisbaum to the show. Hey, Herb.
Hey, how's my favorite overnight dude?
How are you, sir? I'm fine and well.
Good. It would not be a fun month if I didn't get to talk to you. Thanks for having me on again.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Herb, tell everybody just, again, a little background on how you got started and tell everybody about ConsumerMan.com.
Sure. I've been doing this since the 70s, believe it or not, and I just like this kind of reporting where it helps people to avoid the ripoffs and scams and be smarter with their money. And I'm out here in Seattle. I work for a local radio station. I write a weekly story for NBCNews.com, and I just post them all up on my website to make it easy to find at ConsumerMan.com. And if you want it even easier, you sign up for the free newsletter, and I just send you an email every week with the information. You can check it out that way.
And it's ConsumerMan.com. Make sure you check that out.
Before you'll see the flying me with my little cape. I should have been the consumer dude. I never thought about
the consumer dude. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, man, consumer dude. Hey, you haven't done any radio shows on the floor in an elevator lately, have you, Herb?
No, not lately.
No,
that was
okay.
The last time we talked, you know, that was a fun period.
Such a great picture when we posted it on our Facebook page of you. Remind everybody the story. It was so funny. The power went out.
My friend in San Francisco radio, I do him every couple of weeks, and he used to have me on a landline. There were no landlines at my brother's condo in Atlantic City where I was visiting, and he had to have me on because a guest had fallen through. So I literally heard the phone ring in the elevator in my brother's condo, and I picked it up, and I said hello, and it was a bill collector. And I figured, well, if it's taking incoming calls, they can probably call me from San Francisco. So my brother said, I don't know what number it is. Check your bill. He found the number. We gave it to San Francisco radio. They called me, and I did the five-minute segment on the floor in my Hawaiian shirt in an elevator.
And it was a great picture, too. That's fantastic. I do love the fact that it was a bill collector who called. I think that there's something ironic and funny about that.
Yeah.
By the way, before we get to some of the consumer stories, mm-hmm. You were part of the Walk to End Alzheimer's.
Yes.
In Washington, tell me about that, and it helped raise over $120,000.
$120,000 in this one walk, but when you put all the walks together that were done in the state of Washington, it'll probably top $1 million.
Yeah.
And Alzheimer's has been a part of my family since I was very, very young. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. Back then, they just called it dementia.
Yeah.
My mother passed away from Alzheimer's. My grandmother's sister, so my great aunt had Alzheimer's, and my mother's sister, she had Alzheimer's, and my next door neighbor passed away from Alzheimer's.
Oh, man.
So I have experienced the sadness of this disease and what it does to people for my entire life. I've been very active with the Alzheimer's community and with the Alzheimer's chapter out here in Washington. They're doing some great research. The money is actually funding research. They're starting to get the first breakthroughs and work on finding what's really causing the disease, how they can treat it, and possibly someday cure it. They believe there's like 5 million or more people in this country living with Alzheimer's, and that's probably by a third too low, or maybe two-thirds too low. So, and devastating families, the cost of caring for these folks, it's just devastating. So it's something we actually have to deal with as we all grow older.
I think at this point, everybody has experienced it in some way or shape, in their lives, with whether it be friends or family or people that you were in contact with. It's horrible.
And the only good thing about me growing older is I've now passed the age where I can't get early onset Alzheimer's. So I know one of the benefits of getting older, I guess. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, congratulations on helping out for that. And I know that they had a walk here in Chicago just this past Sunday.
Yeah, they were all over the country. Yeah. They were doing the last couple of weeks trying to raise a lot of money to get a lot of research, but also to help people caring for their loved ones who have this disease.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good for you, Herb. All right. Let's get to the first story. It's about student loan defaults. This is a good thing and a bad thing, as you wrote about.
Well, what's happening is anytime, you know, these defaults are increasing, the loan debt is increasing, people are panicking, so there's a marketing opportunity for either scammers or sleazy business people. And it's very much like when we were in the home mortgage crisis situation. Companies came out of the woodwork to solve your problem magically, instantly, guaranteed, and that's exactly what they're doing in this. They're contacting people. They're doing Facebook ads. They're doing tweets. They're doing radio ads. They're doing newspaper ads, you name it, and they're telling people that we have this solution, that we can either totally erase your student loan debt or really, really lower the payments, and we've got the solution that nobody else has, and we can do this for you. What the ads never mention is there's typically a fee of between $600 to $1,200, and despite the claims of guaranteed results and customized programs, the companies don't do anything special that you couldn't do for yourself for free, and they charge money and in some cases don't do anything at all. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau told me that they've seen a huge increase in the number of companies that are charging very large upfront fees to get borrowers into these government debt relief plans that they could sign up for on their own for free. It's very concerning. People already in trouble, and then they get themselves even deeper in debt and maybe in more trouble. So I want everyone to know to beware of these things and not fall for them.
And these fees between $600 and $1,200, they're up front, too. So you have to pay those before the company, quote-unquote, does anything.
Correct. But, of course, they never tell you that in the advertising. You find that out after they suck you in and you call the company and they tell you what wonderful things they can do for you. And then after you get the real hard, high-pressure sales pitch, then you're told, oh, by the way, you have to pay the money. And they do. There's basically companies that are doing some of this that charge. There's nothing wrong with charging to provide a service. I mean, people do your taxes for you and you pay for it as long as they're upfront with what they're doing and how much they're charging. There are other companies that are sort of legitimate and don't really do what they say they're doing. And then there's the out-and-out scammers, those who just take your money and totally split. But there's a lot of really sleazy, questionable marketing techniques being used to do this and what we see. A lot of these things, Nick, are designed to look like the company has some kind of special relationship with the federal government. They do not. Mm. These are just independent companies. I've seen these postcards. I've seen these ads. Most of them use a Department of Education logo without permission to make you think you're either being contacted by the U.S. government or someone who has a special relationship with the U.S. government. They don't. And some of them reference the Obama New Student Loan Forgiveness Program and make it sound like they're the only ones that can access these federal benefits. They're not the only ones. And by the way, there is no such thing as the Obama Student Loan Forgiveness Program. Mm. There are a number of programs available that help students. They're in place through the Department of Education. Anybody who tells you they're going to get access to the Obama Student Loan Forgiveness Program, run away as fast as you can. There is no such thing.
Okay. And what is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? What can they do about this? Can they do anything?
Well, they have done, and some states have tried to go after these companies. Your attorney general there, Lisa Madigan, has been very active in going after some of these companies. But the best way is to not get involved at all, give these companies your money, waste your money, and then in some cases what you'll do is you'll pay them money, they'll do nothing, so you're going to be in default with your loan, so you're even in a worse situation. Or what they'll do is they'll say, we got it all taken care of, so now you sign over your loan to us, you give them your loan information, something you should never give to a third party because it often involves a Social Security number and an account number. You pay us. Well, you pay them, and you don't realize you're tacking on a fee, maybe $50 every month on top of what you pay the government. If you have a problem, there are a number of programs in place. They are free from the federal government. The easiest way, Nick, is if anybody's listening, go to my website, consumerman.com. The story is there on the homepage. Go through the story, and I have links directly to the various programs that can help you with this, that you don't have to pay any money to start the process.
You know, student loans alone can destroy people. I mean, without this
Absolutely.
Kind of thing happening. I mean, I know people who are in their 40s paying student loans off.
I have talked to people for previous stories who have gotten in situations where this one woman told me that she believes she will never get married, she will never have a family, she will never have kids because she is so drowning in student loan debt. And she's got a good job. She is a nurse. Mm. And she says the income that I'm making based on the student loans that I had to take out to get this education. I will never get out of this situation. She sees it. It's very sad. She sees no hope in her life whatsoever. I talked to a woman for this story who fell for the scam, and she's in a situation where she went back to this college again for a second career, got a master's degree, and then had some down years where she couldn't pay. She's facing $250,000 in loans. She's never going to pay those off.
Oh, man.
And it, you know, every month that weight is on your shoulder. It's very, very sad, the situation some people feel.
It really.
Yeah.
And people will take advantage of that. It's just horrible.
Absolutely.
All right, Herb, that's why we're all glad you're around, my friend. Consumerman.com, check out that website and the story about the student loan defaults. And Herb, hang on, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He is our consumer guy, and you can check him out at consumerman.com. We'll come back and talk more right after the news here on 720 WGN. Hey, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Check us out on Facebook, at Nick D Show, on Twitter as well. Herb Weisbaum is with us. He is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can read all of his stories. You can subscribe to his newsletter at consumerman.com. And we've got more consumer issues and news to talk about. And let's welcome Herb back to the show. Hi, Herb.
Hello, Nick.
All right. This is this next story is, I think, really important for a lot of people out there, because we all talk about fine print. You know, and you know, whenever you sign something, you should read it. Whenever you are going into an agreement, you should read everything, including the fine print. And this story that I read that you wrote, Herb, was kind of astonishing to me. It's that credit card contracts are now literally too hard for people to read. Most people, some people can't even read them. Tell us this story. This is really a shocker.
Sure. There's a website called creditcards.com, and they did an analysis of more than 2,000 current credit cards agreements that are on file with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They have to file them with the government. And they run them through these computers that have algorithms that say what grade level the writing is at, so they're able to do that. And they found that these agreements are typically written at the 11th grade reading level, but unfortunately, half of Americans read at the 9th grade reading level or below. Mm. So most people are not able to read these agreements, and if you can't read them, you can't possibly understand them. By comparison, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix is an 8th grade level, and the Book of Exodus and the King James Version of the Bible is written at the 10th grade level. Credit card agreements are written at the 11th grade level, which, by the way, is actually good, because in the last couple of years they've actually simplified them a bit. They used to be written at even a higher grade level.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And people are just finding that they can't even literally read it.
Well, first of all, they're long. These things are a huge amount of words. The average credit card agreement is 4,900 words, which would take you 20 minutes to read. And some of them are a whole lot longer, and I'll give you some of the highlights and lowlights in just a minute.
Okay.
But they're incredibly long. They're incredibly difficult to read. I'll be honest with you, Nick. I don't read. I mean, I'm the consumer guy. Who is going to read all this stuff?
Right.
First of all, you can't change it. So what I do, and the tip for the listeners, is you look at the back two pages, or there's two pages somewhere with the agreement that basically spells out everything you need to know about the card, the interest rate and the penalty fees and all that kind of stuff. But everything else in there affects you, but most people will never read it. For instance, most credit cards, almost every one card agreement now says you are bound to mandatory arbitration. If you don't like something the credit card company did and you have a problem, you do not have any right to sue the credit card company. You do not have any right to join a class action lawsuit against the company. You must go to arbitration, which, of course, the company picks the arbitration and the arbitrator, and we know how that goes in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff is buried in there, and by using the card, you have legally agreed to that agreement. So even if you read it or not, once you use the card and do the first transaction on the card, it is legally determined that you have agreed to that agreement. So it's just a terrible situation. And what they did is they asked about 1,000 credit card holders what word they would use to describe these agreements. And I found this very, very – by the way, about half, 46%, said they never or hardly ever read the credit card agreements. I think it's higher than that. I think that people weren't telling the truth. I don't know anybody who reads these things.
Yeah, yeah.
When they were asked to describe the card agreement, just one word, what would you say? Here was what they said. They said long, wordy, verbose, confusing, complex. Some said tedious, painful, and unclear were also words that were mentioned.
Wow.
Good idea. I think the people nailed it on those words.
Yeah, I'm surprised the word intimidating wasn't used, because I mean that's what I mean. Any legalese stuff I'm not very skilled at.
Sure.
And one of the reasons is because I find it intimidating. And that's one of the first things that the feelings that crops up in me, and if I'm ever in any kind of situation like that.
And some would suggest that while it's important to have, you know, you have to write legal documents in a certain way, that you don't have to make them so intimidating that only a lawyer could understand them. And the government has actually told credit card companies that they want them to write them in language that people understand, because what good is a contract nobody understands? Let me just give you a couple of highlights and lowlights from the survey. So they found out that HSBC's Platinum Rewards card was the easiest to read. It was written at an eighth grade level.
Okay.
All right. If they can do it, why is everybody else at the 11th or 12th or 13th grade level, right?
Yeah, right. And that's HSBC's Platinum Rewards card.
Right. So they could do it.
Okay.
Why couldn't everybody else do it? Synovus Bank's Visa and MasterCard agreements were written at the 17th grade level. That's grad school.
Wow.
The most difficult. Again, why are you doing this? When it comes to length, Fifth Third Bank, and I love the name of that bank.
I know.
It's like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
No, I know.
Pick a name.
It's very no. It's always because they sponsor a lot of stuff here in Chicago, and in fact, there's like a Fifth Third Bank section at the United Center when I go to Hawks games.
Right.
And we always find it really amusing. I always thought the name of that bank was just very amusing.
It is. But anyway, they had the longest agreement. Maybe it's because they have a lot of names. Their average word count on their agreements was 11,380 words.
Wow.
11,380. The shortest was the State Employees Credit Union with only 3,487 words. And again, the average was 4,900 words. So if you can do it for 3,400 or 4,900, why 3,400 or 4,900, why do you got to go 11,300? I mean,
yeah.
Come on, get serious.
Doesn't make any sense. And also, what were some of I also see that the study found that many of the country's largest financial institutions have agreements that require the cardholder to read at a high school level or higher.
Yeah, and these are big-name banks that you'll recognize: TD Bank, Bank of America, BB&B, U.S. Bank, PNC Bank, Citizens, again, Fifth Third Bank. The average agreement at Barclays Bank Delaware, level of 14.8 years, junior college. That's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm sorry, that is just ridiculous. It doesn't have to be at that level. And, you know, everybody fears the fine print, and there's a good reason why, because you can't read it. It's too long. It's too complicated.
Yeah. Is there anything that people can do about this? I mean, things are slowly getting better, yes?
Yes. They're slowly getting better. They've come down from a few years ago. The average card agreement in the last 5 years has come down from 12th grade to 11th grade. All right, we're moving in the right direction. And down to 4,900 words, about down 500 words or so. But all the consumer groups I spoke to for this story all said that if the credit card companies put their mind to it, they could protect themselves, they could do what they needed to do, explain to people what the deal is, and do it in a much shorter situation, and do it also in many fewer words. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, just for conversation's sake, a number of years ago put out one that did everything that needed to be done in two pages. No one I spoke to is suggesting it has to be just two pages, but it certainly doesn't have to take 20 minutes to read.
Now, in a situation like this, obviously you could bring it to someone to read for you and explain it to you.
Sure, but what's the point? The point is, number one, it's one of those agreements where you can't change. You know, it's like when they hand you the home loan agreement. You can't change it.
Yeah.
You can only agree to it or not agree to it. And if you use the card, you agree to it. The best you can do, like I said, most people won't. Realistically, they won't do it, is read the summary. They're required by law to put a summary page or two on that document that tells you the things you need to know. Just like when you apply for a credit card, it's called the Schumer box, and it tells you the interest rate and the penalty fees and the grace period and all that kind of thing. Look, make sure you know what the deal is when you're going into it, and then check that when you get the credit card agreement, because it'll tell you all the really important things you need to know.
And that's usually, as you said, usually the last or the last couple of pages that the summary pops up.
Some may put it in the front, but there's usually a page or two where there's some boxes and it summarizes everything. That's what you need to read.
Make sure you read that for sure, and then hopefully this will be cut down a little bit in length and the level of which you have to read it.
Wow. Yeah, by the time you're ready to retire, maybe we'll be down to 10th grade or something.
Wow, interesting story. You know, there are so many credit card commercials on TV,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of these same-day credit cards or these payday credit cards, talk a little bit about how that works, Herb. You know, like people were like, oh, my check doesn't come until Friday, but I can get this card. Tell everybody how that works and how sometimes that's a pretty dangerous thing.
Well, I've written a whole lot of stories, and there's a lot of concern in the consumer community about payday loans, because most people who take out a payday loan, study after study has shown, are not able to pay it back when the bill comes due, and they don't just do it as a one-time short-term fix. They do it over and renew it over and over and over again, and they wind up getting themselves deeper and deeper in debt. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is currently weighing new regulations that would regulate that industry. The industry is totally opposed. Consumer groups would like to see more. They have a very radical concept that's being proposed, that just like with other loans, a payday lender would have to do a little bit of due diligence and find out that you're capable of paying back the loan before they gave you the loan. The industry is opposed to that. The consumer groups are for that. I would think most lenders, unless they wanted to get you in some kind of debt trap, would want to know you could pay back the loan before they gave it to you. But that's where we stand, and I'll be writing about that as soon as the feds come out with their decision, which could be months. I mean, you never know when they're going to come out with a rule. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about that when it comes out. But at this point in time, you've got to be really, really careful. I know it sounds like an option when you feel strapped, but maybe there's something else you can do. Maybe you just borrow it from a family member. Maybe the boss would give you a little bit of money up front on your paycheck, interest-free, something. That should be the absolute last resort, and think twice before you do it, because odds are it's not going to be a one-shot deal and a one-term deal.
You know, also, it's interesting that we were just talking about how people, you know, these credit card agreements and the fine print and everything. When I see these commercials, and they're because I work nights, I watch a lot of daytime TV, mm-hmm. and, you know, especially in the morning. And a lot of the daytime TV is skewed towards people, you know, who maybe are unemployed. Or, you know, it's they kind of,
sure.
Yeah, you know, they skew it that way, thinking the people who watch, you know, who watch television late at night or early in the morning are unemployed or in debt. And every single, you know, every other commercial is a debt commercial. And when I watch the commercials, I always look at the bottom of the screen. And we were just talking about, you know, yep. fine print. I always look at the bottom of the screen, and it's so tiny and it's so quick, some of the things that they pop up there. Now, legally, what do they have to show on these commercials?
Well, legally, you know, the rules are that a disclaimer is supposed to be able to be read and up long enough for people to see it. You as well, you know from what you just said that no one's enforcing that rule, unfortunately, and it's not happening. And usually those disclaimers change everything that they just said in the ad with a big print and the Mr. Announcer Man. I also find it with the same thing. As you know, I work in radio out here in Seattle.
Right.
And I hear an ad for something, and then I hear at the end, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
That tells me that everything that they just told me in the ad was completely changed by what the Mr. Announcer said at 100 miles an hour. And some of them now, which I feel is totally disgusting, is they're digitally sped up, so there's no way you could possibly know what they're saying. I did one once as a joke to see what they said. It took me 17 passes with my recorder where I could slow it down a little bit to find out what they were saying at the end of the commercial, and they were basically saying everything we just said in the ad was not true. It's just horrible what companies are getting away with, but there's just not enough regulators on the beat to stop these guys. And as we've seen with a lot of banking things lately, Wells Fargo just being the latest in a
yep.
long line of big-name banks,
yep.
not only are they going up to the line, these banks are going over the line with what they're doing. And it's really time, in my opinion, that somebody needs to go to jail. I mean, the word has to get out. Somebody really needs to go to jail to make it a point that you cannot rip off the public like you're doing, make millions and millions and millions of dollars, personal salary, and for your stockholders, and then just walk away and say, okay, I'll pay a fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing, Herb, we talk about this all the time, is that the scammers and the people who are responsible for this just have no conscience. Because I've been, and I've talked about this with you before, sure. Herb, I was in a massive amount of debt a few years back. And had to dig my way out of it. And the pressure and how you feel during that, it can take a lot out of you. It took a lot out of me, man. I was depressed. I was worried constantly. It took a long time for me to dig out, but I'm telling you, Herb, once you're out of it, you feel 1,000 times better. But when you're in that funk, you're looking for any kind of answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these guys are taking advantage of.
Right. And it's always amazing to me, and you were probably in the situation where when you are down on your luck and have no money, but somebody offers you the instant solution guaranteed and sounds like they know what they're talking about, somehow you come up with $1,000 to pay them when you have no money.
That's
whatsoever.
Right.
You go to your aunt, your uncle, your mom, your dad, I don't know what you do, and they know this, and they prey on people. These are absolute predators, and it's absolutely disgusting.
It
really is.
Well, all right, Herb, everybody can check out consumerman.com. Hang on, okay, Herb?
You got it, Nick.
All right. Herb Weisbaum is with us. He's always a great guest. And if you want to subscribe to his newsletter and get all the latest, he's looking out for us. That's what he does. We'll talk more with Herb right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, followed by the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We've got Wildcard Wednesday coming up. You choose the bumps. But right now, Herb Weisbaum comes back and joins us. He's the Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the Consumer Beat for NBCNews.com. Joins us once a month. It's always a pleasure. And you can check out his website, consumerman.com. And we welcome Herb back. Hey, Herb.
Hey, next time I do this on a Wednesday, I want to pick the bump.
Okay. All right. We'll do that. Next time we do it on a Wednesday, Dan, you can pick one of the bumps.
Cruising. Smoky.
Cruising by Smoke. Mark that down.
So all right, we'll do it.
So the next visit, we'll hear a little Smokey Robinson. Very, very good.
No, it's a little Motown for make everybody happy in your neck of the woods.
That's right. We do a thing here on Fridays called Fly Jams Friday, Herb.
Okay.
Where we play a ton of great R&B songs to kick off the weekend.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah.
Smokey came through here a couple of years ago. I grew up in Philadelphia, so I grew up on Motown.
Oh, yeah.
Went to see Smokey. He was absolutely phenomenal, still has his voice, et cetera. And he had this older African-American gentleman in the back. I mean, he was in his late 70s or whatever. And he said, I can't remember his name. He's like, Earl, come up here. And he comes up on a stool, and he plays a little riff, and he says, Earl wrote this riff for me. And it just bounced around in my head, and I didn't know what to do with it. And then one day I'm just driving along with the top down along Lake Michigan, and I said, you know, it's so great to be cruising. Yeah, cruising. And so he had him play the song right there in front of us. The guy who came up with the whole thing was just absolutely phenomenal. So
great.
We'll do cruising as a bump sometime.
We'll do that. Absolutely. We promise. That's great. Before we get to the stinky washing
machines, washers.
I want to get to that. You know, obviously, I don't know if you're aware of this, Herb. It's an election year.
Yeah. What do you think I did for 2 hours last night?
Yeah, I think all of us did last night. So what's going on with robocalls? Have they decreased, increased? You know, people,
sure. We talk about this a lot. Robocalls are definitely up. And what's happening is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission wrote a letter, an open letter, and said to the phone companies. Now, these are the landline phone companies. So they are supposed to report back, I think it's the second week in October or something like that, with what, who knows if they're going to have a solution or just say we're looking at it. But that's the timeline, and we may have some more on that the next time we talk.
Okay.
But if you do have a telephone service that comes up through your cable system, so like Comcast or whatever, or Vonage, you can get a free service called Nomo Robo, Nomorobo. I have it on my phone here. I very rarely, if ever, get a robo call. It rings once and it automatically hangs up. It was started by a guy who won the prize from the Federal Trade Commission several years ago to stop robocalls. He just came out with an app that is available for cell phones, and I think it's $1.99, but it's well worth it if it's driving you crazy. And there are other options that you can look for too for robocall blockers if you have a cell phone. But we got to get them for the landline phones. That's the real serious problem we can't deal with. And you know, it is legal in most cases to do a robocall for a political party to your landline phone. They can do political robocalls to a landline because the rules about dialing to a landline phone are based on telemarketing, and that's not considered telemarketing.
Oh.
They're not trying to sell you something. So it's legit. They can do a robocall for a survey. Your church or synagogue can call robocall. As long as they're not trying to sell you something, those kind of robocalls are legal on your landline phone. Mm-hmm. They are not legal on your cell phone unless you've given them prior permission.
So Nomo Robo is what we're talking
no
about.
Nomo Robo.
Okay.
As in no more robo.
That's right. Okay. All right. Washing machines are smelling. What?
Thank you, washers. You know what they always say? We have an update for you tonight on the...
Yes.
I first reported on this in like 2006. How's that for an update?
Wow! And 10 years, Herb.
I was hearing from people who were having these stinky, smelly washers, were loaded with mold and mildew, and I went to their homes, and it was like they put the wash in, and it came out worse than when it was put in.
These are front loaders, right? Not the top loaders.
That's right. And I wrote a story for that. At that point in time, it was MSNBC.com. And more than 2 million people read the story in 2 days. That's how many people had a problem with stinky. I mean, it was unbelievable. And what the deal is, you know, people are using these to use less water, and they supposedly handle the clothes better and do a little better job of cleaning. But this lawsuit was filed against Whirlpool, Maytag, and Kenmore washing machines. They were just a little too green because of the foul-smelling odor that came out about them. So the lawsuit was filed in 2006. People were finding that there were mold in the front gaskets. There was a moldy smell. I saw some of these washers that were torn apart. There was actually mold behind them, the drum and the motor. There was no way you could do to clean it out, even though they said run a clean cycle or do this and that or use this packet once a month to clean out the washer. There was nothing you could do about that. The lawyers for the lawsuit claimed this was a defective design, that when they came to America, because front loaders were in Europe years ago, they did something that changed the design. It was defective, and that was causing the problem. The manufacturers say there was no problem, but after 9 years of litigation, it was finally settled in April, and about 5.5 million people may be eligible for a refund or a rebate. And the deadline for filing for that is coming up, I believe it's October the 11th. So if you're one of these people that you have one of these washing machines, you need to deal with this. It's Whirlpool, Maytag, and Kenmore washers. Again, the companies say they didn't do anything wrong, but they're willing to settle. And you can, it's not a huge settlement, Nick, but in some cases you can get the settlement. Here's the term. So if you had a mold or odor problem within 5 years of purchase, you can get $50 in cash or a 20% rebate on the best negotiated retail price on a new one. If you didn't have a mold problem within 5 years, you can still get a cash rebate of 5% on your next purchase. Anyone who paid to have a molding machine repaired within the first 5 years can get a reimbursement of up to $500. So there is some money on the line here.
Yeah.
And they worked long and hard to try to get this settlement. And again, the deadline is October the 11th. So if you want to file a claim, you have to do it online. The link is with the story on my website. But I definitely would advise you to do it, because there is going to be some money and rebates coming back to people who either paid money or want to get a new machine.
Okay.
I, by the way, you may be asking, Herb, would you use that to buy a front loading washer? Because I reported on the story, and by the way, before I forget, I'm going to forget this. LG also settled a similar lawsuit recently. They had the same claims of the stink and everything else, and their lawsuit was settled as well. The claim form is on the website with the story, and now there's some discussion from blog posts that there may be problems with Samsung front-loading washing machines. So this appears to be a widespread and ongoing problem that you can read about more in the story. But when I had the choice, I was so paranoid about buying a front-loading washer because I had seen all these horror stories,
yeah,
that I decided to go with a top-loading high-efficiency washer when we just bought one for our house about a year ago. And for folks who are not, you know, who have had a bad experience before and are not sure which way to go, Consumer Reports did ratings on these things, and they found that with these high-efficiency top loaders, they're almost as good as the front loaders. They do. I love mine. Does a very, very good job. You don't have to bend down. You put it in the top, and keep that in mind. They're very water efficient. They don't have the agitator in them, so they just have a gigantic drum. And they spin really quickly and get a lot of the water out, which makes things dry more quickly. But I've not heard, and I've certainly not had any problems with the top loading. It's always the front loading that has had the problem.
Okay. All right, so if you had that front loader odor problem, you can check out the story, read the story, and the link is at consumerman.com if you want to get that.
For LG, for Sears, for Maytag, for Whirlpool, and you'll just get an idea of what's going on.
All right, great. Herb, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Nick.
And we will talk to you next month.
Just before Halloween.
You got it.
Okay.
All right,
take
Herb.
Care.
Take care, buddy. There you
Bye-bye.
Go. Herb Weissbaum, everybody. Helps everybody out. Great guy. Once a month he joins us, and you can read him and get his newsletter at consumerman.com. All right, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.